A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. I have a little story to tell you about this case. It's brief.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping everyone enjoyed their week off.
Yes. I know that I always appreciate like a mental break from everything. It really feels energizing for me, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And just so you guys know, like, we're still recording. This is actually during your break, but we are still giving you content.
Yeah, you bet. So I'm excited. I don't know about you, but I feel like super energized and ready to go.
Yes. And I'm excited that you have a story about this case.
I do.
All right. So what's your story?
So this is a little bit of a different story and it's not long. So bear with me. So when we started this podcast, I believe our first release was like July of 2019. Is that right?
Yeah.
We're coming up on 2 years. So that's
crazy.
Cool. And when we originally started, we had recorded at like 4 or 5 cases before we actually released. And we were really trying to engage people before the release and everything. And a lot of people were giving us suggestions on cases to do. And I don't know, we were pulling and talking to people from internet forums and our friends and family and so forth. So in July of 2019, I get a Facebook message from someone in Connecticut. And she said, I have a case for you because I just was in passing seeing a conversation that you were having online. Great. Awesome. Tell me about it. She's like, I'm from Connecticut, just like you. And this case happened in Wallingford, Connecticut, where I'm from. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty close. I know exactly where Wallingford is. So she told me all about this case. And I was like, all right, no problem. I'll look into it. And I looked into it and there was like nothing. There was like the Charlie Project and maybe one or two other articles. And at that time, I guess I was probably really lacking confidence, and I was like, I don't know. I mean, I want to talk about unknown cases, but I don't really know how to do it yet without an abundance of information. So I was like, I'm going to put it off, but I won't forget about it. And I never did, really. I've tried several times to do this, but I feel really good about it now. And this person's name is Katie. I don't even know if she listens to us. She totally might have just seen us in passing and said, do the case and never heard of us again. I don't know, but I still think the credit is due. So, Katie, if you're out there listening, I didn't forget about the case you suggested. Another couple of things about this case is over time, I've been checking in, seeing if there's anything developing. Hopefully she was found. And the same like 2 articles from local newspapers in Connecticut still exist on this person. And then someone came along very recently, I believe. Her name is, I believe, Sarah Dimio, and she is in broadcasting, and she has her own podcast. It's called Faded Out, and she did a completely different case for her first season. And second season, she focused explicitly on this case. Now, I haven't listened to the whole season of her covering this missing person, but I do know, and I have listened enough to know, that she actually had interviewed the family, which there are interviews in newspaper articles for sure, but it was really something different, a different experience for me to have read about these people, and now I'm hearing straight from them their perceptions of things that happened to their daughter, sister, loved one. And I'm really glad that's out there, and I just feel like I need to mention this resource and this podcast. Sarah Dimio, Faded Out. She covers this in season 2. So if you're interested in more details and an in-depth, super in-depth deep dive, please go listen to that podcast. Definitely one of my resources, The Charlie Project and some local newspapers in Connecticut. So I'm going to give you all the information I can find. And yeah, please continue to read about her, because she definitely is one of the ones that did not get the media attention that she deserved. All right. So the case, finally, I'm going to tell you about is the case of Doreen Vincent. Doreen Vincent was born on September 30th of 1975 to Mark Vincent and his then wife, Donna. So yeah, it's an old case, guys. She would still be alive and likely, I believe, in her 40s, mid-40s. When Donna and Mark met, she was 16 and he was 19. When she became pregnant, they married. That's the thing you did back then, in a lot of cases. Whether you dated a long time, you just met, and something happened, it was you just marry the person. By the time Doreen was 2 or 3 years old, Mark and Donna broke up. Timelines are fuzzy and probably seemingly lack some importance to reporters that have covered the case, so I apologize for that. But Mark and Donna did break up, and Mark eventually met and married a woman named Sharon. Donna went on as a single mom, and she did eventually marry, and she had another daughter, Stephanie. Before Doreen disappeared, she lived part-time with her father and part-time with her mother, although I get the impression that she really spent more time with her father. Donna lived in Western Connecticut. At some point during her childhood, she lived in Danbury, which is very close to the New York border on the west. But I understand that she eventually lived in Wallingford, which is roughly, give or take, depending on traffic, about 40 minutes east of Danbury towards the center of the state. And Mark was living in Bridgeport. Bridgeport is heading south towards New York City. And roughly the distance is not a convenient distance by any means between Waterbury and Bridgeport. I mean, it's probably, give or take, 45 minutes. In June of 1988, Mark bought a new home with his then-wife, Sharon, in Wallingford, Connecticut. Still, I mean, it's a distance from Waterbury. It's a distance from Bridgeport. Brand new place. Wallingford is rather rural, though. So, although it takes no time to get to big cities that you might have heard of, like New Haven and Hartford, still known as a rural community. Bridgeport is a city, and this was a huge change for Doreen. She had her whole life in Bridgeport. She had friends and everything, and it was a really rough adjustment and kind of a shock to her to go to absolutely this rural town with nothing in the middle of summer even. So she's pretty much out of school. And I mean, I don't know if you can imagine what it's like to be 12 years old at the end of the school year, going, and then you're like, wow, I have nothing over the summer. And I get to go to a new school in the fall. Great. This sounds awful. On June 15th, 1988, now there was no information really about the day of June 15th, 1988. And the timeline really starts in the evening. But I guess we can assume that it's really uneventful and nothing of any substance, or at least police don't appear to think it had any meaning about what happened during the day.
Okay.
So around 8 to 9 p.m., Mark reported to police later that he was actually working around the house. I don't know. I kind of think of it as tinkering. And after he was done with that, he went looking for his daughter. He checked a room, but he couldn't find her. At this time, Sharon wasn't home. She was actually at church. When Sharon arrived home at 11:30, she discovered that Doreen was missing, and Mark had said basically that he hadn't seen her around, and he went in his truck and went looking for her. Sharon later stated that he had been gone for 3 to 4 hours, coming home empty-handed, for lack of better words, without a trace of Doreen. So they had just moved into this house in Wallingford, not 10 days earlier. So the plan was for Donna, which was Doreen's mother, to come up to Wallingford to pick her daughter up for the weekend. She was scheduled to do that on Friday. Now, this was her first time going there. I believe she already obtained directions to get there, but she was going to be the one to arrive there on Friday to pick up their daughter, keep her for the weekend, or whatever the visitation was.
Right.
So she calls midweek to let Mark know that she'd be there Friday, or that she might actually have to come on Saturday instead due to some work schedule. Don't forget, she had been a single mom. I believe she's recently married. However, she's still working and things come up. And like in this case, she tried to call in advance and say something might have come up. When she called, the phone just rang and rang and went unanswered. So she arrives on Saturday and she approaches the house and she sees Mark kind of tinkering, I don't know, in the lawn or the garage or something to that extent. And she's kind of like, hi, looking for Doreen here. And he's kind of giving the appearance of being completely unbothered, kind of confused, like, what are you doing here? Kind of attitude. And he's like,
but it was planned that she picked her up.
Yeah, so that's kind of the weird part, is why are you kind of responding this way? And he's like, yeah, Doreen's been missing. And she's like, that's kind of a problem. She's 12 years old. You just moved here. And why don't I know that she's missing? I don't know how soon after this came out, but eventually it was found out that Mark had disconnected the phone from the wall. And that's why she wasn't able to call and get in touch with anyone. So this is all very weird, and she's kind of like, well, you didn't call the police. I don't even know what to make of that, but I'm going to do it. So they call the police, and initially it seems like they really kind of thought this was a runaway case. So there was one notable, and I believe it's only once, instance of Doreen running away. Now, she ran away, and she actually hitchhiked to her mother's house. So she didn't run away and stay away or wasn't found to be with a friend or something like that. She ran somewhere to her mother's house. So it was kind of frustrating, I'd imagine, for the family to have them kind of like focus in on that, because yeah, so she's left before, but her mom was like, if she ran to my house before, she would have ran to me now.
She's 12. I don't care where she ran before.
Exactly. And I don't think that much has changed between now and 1988, where if your kid leaves and you haven't seen him for a few days, you're not kind of like, that doesn't feel very good. We need to do something about this. So, you know, as the police are trying to figure out what's going on and whatever, a series of odd things happen. So, for starters, and this is actually in no particular order, and I found them to be, across the one or two articles that I've seen, to be differing between the articles. Now, first and foremost, Mark seems completely unfazed and unworried, unbothered by his daughter's disappearance. And this is evidenced by the fact that he didn't immediately call the police, okay? He and Sharon broke up by the end of summer. Now, it's never been cited that it had anything to do with Doreen's disappearance. Mark had left the house, and he left the police no forwarding information, so they didn't know where he was for a while. And he never called the police or the detectives to get updates on the case of his daughter. They interviewed Sharon, and she seems to have had questions about Mark's story. So eventually it came out when Mark was questioned that it seemed like nothing happened and Doreen was just, bam, missing. But he did say that they had an argument and that he pushed her, and he pushed her hard enough, I guess, to have broken a window. She got upset and she went out the front door. And that's when he never saw her again. However,
that's convenient.
Sharon really doubted that this was exactly how it happened. And that's because the front door was deadbolted. Now, the way that we know deadbolts now, well, at least to my knowledge, is a deadbolt locks from the outside or unlocks from the outside, right? But in this case, in this house, and I think it's the case with older houses, is that it was deadbolted from the inside. So someone would still have to have a key to let themselves in or out of the house. Sharon had the key. So it would have been impossible, it seems, for Doreen to have exited out the front door. So make of that what you will. I don't know. And then where did Mark go for those 3 to 4 hours? I don't know if they ever found out. I read in one of the articles that when they spoke to witnesses in Bethel, Connecticut, which is around the area of Danbury, they did see a truck that was parked in the state forest. Nothing came of that. They searched the forest time and time again with cadaver dogs and their best investigative techniques of the time and found nothing. I'm not really sure if police really have determined that they believe that it was Mark, but they did follow up on that lead eventually. Mark also gave a description of what Doreen took with her and what she was wearing. And later, when they searched the residence where Sharon still lived about a year later, they found a lot of the same things that in the house that Mark had stated that she had with her. Mark also visited, in one of the articles, I believe it said a friend. In one of the articles, it said his mother a couple of days after the disappearance. I think it's been alluded that this is actually even a Father's Day visit. And he never made one mention of Doreen or her missing to either the friend or his mother. Another questionable thing is, and you know how Melissa and I feel about this, Mark refused a polygraph test. So Melissa and I both would say, like, we'll never take one, but we're always at the same time, however hypocritical it is, we question why people don't take polygraphs. And lastly, through interviews with Donna's sisters, they have stated that Mark has never explicitly sexually assaulted them, in their words, but that he was inappropriate and did molest them. So is that something that can be related to the case? I'm not really sure. Does it point to behaviors that might have put Doreen at risk? I'm not sure. So according to what I know now, evidently Mark still lives around Connecticut, although he's moved around so many times, it's really unclear where he lives. Sharon has since died. Donna and her family still hold out hope that they'll know what happened to their daughter. So there are a couple of theories, unless you have some questions or comments first.
I'd like to know, what are the theories besides that Mark did something to her?
So a couple of relevant theories are that she left and she hitchhiked and she's either out there somewhere, or she left and she hitchhiked and met random foul play.
Or not.
Another theory is, and it actually was and might still be a very prominent theory, is there was an active serial killer in the area at the time of Doreen's disappearance. Great. This person, Haddon Clark, was eventually arrested and convicted, and he was convicted of murdering one young woman and a child, I believe, of 6, and then confessed to killing other women and children up and down the eastern seaboard. He happened to be thought to be in Connecticut around the time of that, so he was a really strong possibility, but it's really hard, as you'd suspect, to know if the information is accurate. Nothing that he said or done has led them to the remains or the whereabouts of Doreen, or I believe really any other victims that he has claimed to harm. And he's so inconsistent all the time, I think it's really hard for police and investigators to know how reliable he could be. So really, that was a lead that felt promising, but it really didn't go anywhere. And then there's one other lead. I believe there's a member of the family that has been labeled a pedophile, and they wonder about him, but that doesn't seem like the strongest lead either. So Mark is not the only suspect in this or the only lead that investigators have had. There's actually some really, really strong leads in other directions. But as you can see, there's a lot of details about Mark's story that don't sit right.
Well, right. And that's why it's kind of, I said, what are the theories besides him? Because obviously you can make a case for him being involved.
Absolutely.
Pretty easily.
Mark did do some time in prison for a weapons charge. I don't know if you could tick that in the column of making him look more guilty for something, but take that for what it's worth. Well, right. Absolutely. So, I mean, if you want to start off with the least probable theories.
Sure, which is she ran away.
Well, I would actually say that the family member with a history of pedophilia might be. And just because of Doreen's abrupt departure, no cell phones existed at the time. So that family member would have had a chance encounter of meeting up with her in order to cause her harm.
Yeah, and if it was, you know, 2021 or 2020 and they could reach out to her via social media and they had access to her outside of her parents.
Right.
Sure. But in a world that we are in now, I don't think that's the case.
Right. She literally, if this took place in 2021, she literally probably would have left the house and used her cell phone to call a relative to come pick her up. And it would have been, like, really unfortunate if it was this person to have come pick her up. Does that make sense?
100%.
So it would have to be really a chance encounter for that to have happened. So that one, to me, is probably the least likely.
I would agree with you there. The next least likely for me is that she ran away. Why did he say she ran away again?
Well, it depends which story you go by. His original story was that he went out to tinker with something, came back in the house, went to her room, and she wasn't there. So that would indicate that she left without warning, which she was really unhappy and experienced quite a shock moving to Wallingford. So did she panic and leave because she couldn't handle it? I don't know. But I feel like if you were going to leave because you missed the place that you came from, you probably would have ran to that place, not ran to an alternate place.
And the logic being that in process of that, she would have gotten abducted or whatever.
I guess if she didn't make it to point B, then yeah, it would be completely at random.
I don't like it.
In June of 88, if she had left at 8 o'clock p.m., sun probably just would have been down. So, yeah, it still would be dark.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. So next.
So there's that. She left and she ran away. The other is that I think that you were saying she left and ran away to go back to her mother's or to Bridgeport. Because the alternate that is to run away from it all.
No, she didn't. I mean,
and it would still be the same fate. It would be, well, not necessarily, because if she ran away just to get away from everything, she either could have started a new life somewhere or she would have met with random foul play.
At 12. Yep, sure. I don't think either of that.
Well, we know it's harder for a 12-year-old to run away without some assistance, but it could be sinister assistance.
But how did she, what are the odds that she ran away? I guess, I mean, it's possible. But I don't think she ran away at all. I know she was unhappy, and I get that. Unless she ran away because there was, like, an abusive situation. But then where did she go?
Well, so that brings us to Mark's second story, which is that they did argue, and he pushed her into a window which broke. At first, I said to myself, how hard do you have to push her into a window for it to break? If it's an older house, the windows are not the same quality that we have today, but still, you have to push someone pretty hard to break a window. And she could have been upset and overwhelmed with that situation and left. And although Sharon says her leaving out the front door would be improbable, there's no reason to think that she can't get through a window or that there's no other door in the house.
You're hurting my head.
Visibly, I see that.
His stories just make no sense to me.
They don't make sense to me either, and as far as I could tell, there was never any details about what the argument could have been about. Do I think it was perhaps like some shocking argument? No, it was probably like typical teenager stuff.
Right. But, I mean, typical teenagers don't also leave their lives.
But you're also not supposed to push your daughter so hard she breaks a window.
Part of me wonders if they were, like, somehow struggling and he pushed her, and like, away from him, and I'm not justifying any sense of it, but, and she just, like, palmed through a window. Like, to catch herself.
It's possible, but he certainly did not go, as far as I can tell, into any details about that.
Which blows my mind, because wouldn't she want to do that? Like, wouldn't she want to be like, hey, listen, I know this looks really bad for me, and here's why. But here's why it's actually not that bad for me.
Well, believe me, I do. So I think that when we talk through these theories that we're willing to give some weight to and we're willing to talk through and accept as a possibility, they automatically drive us back to Mark, which disturbs me.
Yep.
Because then I go to, well, he only gave like one interview to police. He never followed up with police. Like, where are you with my daughter's case? Have you found her yet? He moved out and didn't leave a forwarding address. He refused a polygraph. All these things that make him feel like I can't trust him more than those other scenarios.
I agree with you there. But we also can't say, like, because he didn't take a polygraph, he's guilty of something, because we both know that we wouldn't take a polygraph.
Right. So I try to think of the reasons why you might behave this way. And if I were him and I was very uneducated about child behavior, development, and all that, I might very well see this in a very old school way, like the child is being stubborn and they're being a brat and they don't listen to their parents or whatever. And he could have been very much like, well, she left and she made her own choices and there's nothing I could do about it. And that's all I'm going to tell you, police, because she's being a brat. And I want to make it very clear, I'm talking about someone's alleged or could be alleged mentality, not my actual beliefs.
Right. So I guess my question to you then is, do you think that because of what we know now, right, versus what we knew then, there's a difference?
What do you mean?
Well, like, we know now, like, how to handle a missing persons case better, right? Like, we understand how to give, I mean, people still give interviews that they shouldn't, but, like, we understand, like, what information should be obtained by law enforcement. Like, it sounds like law enforcement didn't clarify, you know, was there more to it? How did he push her and that happened? Like, it sounds like law enforcement didn't do any of that. So do you think that plays a role?
That's a great question.
Because I would hope today, right, if that happened, they would then immediately say, okay, like, can you tell us, like, how you pushed her? What happened? Like, they would look for, like, evidence of whatever.
So it's quite likely that law enforcement planned on asking those questions. My understanding is that Mark did not have multiple interviews and stuff. So this is them gathering information about what happened, and he moved out of the house and left no forwarding address before there was any follow-up.
Okay.
And then when they started to really dig in a year later, they found weapons and he went to prison.
Why did it take them a year?
So I imagine that, so he moves out a couple months after she disappears and they spend time looking for him, looking for her. And before you know it, a year's passed before they get to investigating, for example, Mark's mother's home or the old home where they lived in Wallingford.
What does her mom think happened?
I believe that Donna is very suspicious of Mark and his behavior.
And Mark's girlfriend, was she ever interrogated?
She was spoken to, and I know that she's passed now, but what I gather is that she passed not too long after her disappearance.
Okay. Of natural causes?
There's been nothing that I could find. I didn't go looking for her obituary or anything either, but it sounds as if it was natural, like nothing of note.
Okay. So I guess if it happened in 2021, I would give it more pause to, like, the idea that she could have met someone online and left her life and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 80s, although I guess in the 80s was also like it's 8 o'clock, do you know, or 10 o'clock, do you know where your children are?
Yep.
But no, I mean, I don't think that she ran away, which means something happened to her in the house. But part of me wonders, and this is my opinion, did Dad's girlfriend have something to do with it?
Well, as far as we know, she was at church until 11:30. Now, if...
And they separated later that year, you said, right?
They did. There's no other evidence of anything wrong with their relationship, at least no interview that I have heard that state Sharon and her didn't get along or that Sharon disliked her or whatever. Unless Mark and Sharon's stories could be debunked and that the next 2 days they worked together. But I don't think so. I don't think anyone really suspects Sharon.
And this happened in the evening, right? That she disappeared?
Correct. Between 8 and 9 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, the odds of a 12-year-old going outside and, like, leaving at that late at night is scary. Like, you have a 12-year-old, right?
I do.
Right? You do?
On the other hand, though, if she's fearless enough to have hitchhiked before...
Oh, that's true.
The dark isn't really that scary in comparison to something like that. So Mark is known to have a violent temper, although there have been no other charges that I know of after the fact of violence or anything like that. But just going by one of the articles that say he had a history of a violent temper, I don't know what could have happened to make him so angry to have harmed his daughter.
Well, I don't think that's a rabbit hole that we can't even go down. Because who knows why people are crazy?
Well, yeah, and it could have been one of those things where you act out in anger and you had no intention of harming, but something could have happened.
Agreed. I mean, I unfortunately for me, I think that he has something to do with it. A lot of him saying that things she took with her, and then finding them in the house, like, that gives me pause. Did any neighbors see anything or anything?
So they're 10 days in. There's not a whole lot that could have happened. They didn't see anything, but I do believe I read that there had been reports previous to that night of yelling or screaming. Not along the lines of yelling for help, but maybe arguing?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think I have to land on the dad did something to her.
So, yeah, I think I'm 70 dad and then maybe 30% she could have hitchhiked thinking that she was going to go back to her mom's after a really tough fight. And she met with foul play hitchhiking. I don't believe at this point she's out there somewhere. I don't believe she, like, walked away from her life or anything like that. I don't think the serial killer is connected.
I forgot about the serial killer. I don't know, Amy. He was active in the area and he killed little girls?
Women and girls, yeah. Or women and children, you have to, I should say. I'm not sure if he had an MO for a particular gender.
Well, if it turns out she did run away, I think you have to give that some sort of...
You do have to give it some sort of, but I guess you start to think of the odds of encountering a needle in a haystack in the worst way.
Yeah, but it happens. I mean, serial killers exist, right? Like, so I think that we have to at least say, like, okay, if we're willing to admit that she left the house voluntarily.
Yep.
Then I think we have to entertain the serial killer aspect.
I guess I can't argue with that. Yeah, you're right. But I guess I still would lump that in with the 30%.
Yeah, and that's
fair. Encountering foul play with him or someone else.
And I guess what it comes down to for me is if she in fact left the house that evening, you have to say serial. For me, I would say the serial killer. If she did not leave, he did it.
Yeah, that's fair. I could land there with you.
Okay.
But yeah. So, again, guys, if you want to know more about this case and Sarah Dimeo's deep dive, talking with family, and really investigating this case, like, deep down some rabbit holes, again, the podcast is called Faded Out. There are a couple other articles, but I encourage you to use the podcast as a resource and let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Especially after you listen to the whole podcast. Has Sarah's investigative techniques led you in a different direction? I'd really like to know. This case is close to home for me, and I've noticed on Reddit that people who currently live in Wallingford don't know this case.
Hmm.
And that makes me so sad because she's 12. She's a kid. There's not a single child that deserves to be forgotten about or to slip through the cracks.
It's interesting to me that people local don't know the case.
I can't wrap my head around it either. I've seen on the Reddit, literally someone had said, like, I grew up. I think they actually said the town over from Wallingford. I grew up the town over from Wallingford. I've never heard of this case.
That's so interesting to me. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just so interesting to me.
It really is. There was, in the 80s, in my region, there was like a murder of a young child in public. There's a whole backstory to it, but it's a story that people will still talk about that they remember today.
Hmm.
A child was murdered. Like, 30 years later, we still talk about it. And this child disappears from your town without cause or reason or warning, and no one even knows about it. How does that happen?
Amy, I don't know.
All right. Well, Katie, long overdue, but thank you for the suggestion because I had never heard of the case and I never would have known of the case. It was really hard to find. It was not something I would have stumbled on. So, yeah, give us your thoughts. Give us your theories. And that's all I've got.
Yeah, no, thank you for this. And we love these case suggestions and keep them coming.
All right, guys. Well, we will see you next week with an all new case.
Sounds good.
All right.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.